You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 27th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. And I'm exhausted. Yesterday, I got up at 6:15 in the morning. Did a radio interview with Pete Dominic on Sirius Indie, I think it is the channel. And then ended the day after, of course, doing our program on All In with Chris Hayes, sans any type of refreshments, Danishes, but that's another story. And then spent the evening listening to Saul. Wake up every 45 minutes. He goes back to sleep, but he wakes up. So it's a very casual Friday, folks, wherein Cliff Schechter will recap this sort of insane week of politics, which promises to get progressively more insane over the next couple of weeks. Also on the program today, a rare in-studio guest, Isabel Gillies, will be joining us to go over a movie pick. And just a little housekeeping note. On Monday, well, I should say yesterday, David Sirota and Matt Taibbi have been working on a couple of parallel stories that came out about pension funds and how they have been systematically, and I'm talking about public worker pension funds, systematically looted in this country. In fact, Matt Taibbi calls it a scam of unmatchable balls and cruelty. Wall Street's triple effing of ordinary people. Matt will be in studio with us on Monday to discuss. Just wanted to let you know that the app is live, folks. 2,000 of you have already downloaded the app. If you're an Android user and you had some problems with your tablet, that should be fixed now. And our latest update, we'll be updating the iOS app in the coming week or so to reflect some hinkiness on iOS 7. We're getting a lot of great feedback, and we got some really good news. It's not 100% sure, but I feel confident enough about it to announce it. Last year in December, Credo Mobile sponsored this program for a couple of weeks. It was, in my mind, a match made in heaven. I have always appreciated the work that Credo Action has done. I know a lot of people who work for them, who I've met through the years. And almost issue by issue, they push in a way for issues that I genuinely appreciate. It has been so difficult for me to find a sponsor with whom not only do I not have any sort of reservations about pushing their product, but also actually proactively are working towards similar goals as mine. And I believe perhaps as soon as next week, They're going to be sponsoring this program for the next couple of months. And happy to report that the app plays very nicely with the Galaxy S4. I don't know. They offer the Galaxy S4. I think also the S2. I haven't heard about the S2, but I've certainly seen reports about the S4. They also offer the HTC One. I haven't heard anybody feedback on that, but we will check it out. But at the very least, so if you're thinking of changing your plans or changing your phone, just wait until this sponsorship, because I think they're going to have a deal for you as well. So I'm very excited about that. And I think the sponsorship is, you know, should at the very least help offset some of the costs of the app. You know, if I can break even on these propositions, I'm generally fairly happy, much to the chagrin of those who would like my business acumen to be improved. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the wonderful Cliff Schechter. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. It is Casual Friday, and that means we have Cliff Schechter. But when we have Cliff Schechter, that means we have Cliff Schechter's theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, Sammy?
I'm doing all right. Crazy week. I mean, it's a crazy week that I think is the precursor to some genuine real craziness.
I think the apocalypse must be coming.
You know, I'll tell you something. I can't tell. You know, the irony is, of course, is that if you believe the teabaggers and the Republicans, the world will end. I guess it's what, Tuesday, October 1st, when the Affordable Care Act health exchanges go online, despite the fact that only about somewhere between, you know, 7 million people, I guess, will be buying, maybe 7 to 15 million will be buying their insurance on these exchanges. We're going to see another 15 to 20 million who are going to get increased healthcare options through an expanded Medicaid. And the remaining several hundred million people will see no difference in their healthcare, but for the fact that there's a series of regulations that say that your health insurance is actually going to be there when you need it, and you're not going to be denied coverage.
Sam, stop playing it down. That day will be 9/11, the Iron Curtain, and the rise of Kublai Khan all rolled into one.
What about the invasion of Poland?
That's right. The invasion of Poland. In fact, as we know, Ted Cruz is ready for that. You know, somewhere the Sudetenland is getting freaked out.
Yes, and meanwhile, what could happen 2 weeks later is it seems as likely as it's ever been that the Republicans are going to refuse to raise the debt ceiling, and then, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this. people think it genuinely could be catastrophic. They just don't know because it's never really been contemplated. But let's go back and start with Ted Cruz. I've been wanting to talk to you about this for some time. Let me just start with a quote from a piece in Truth Out by William Rivers Pitt, okay, because this really sets the stage quite well. A sitting senator with degrees from Princeton and Harvard, who once announced to his law school classmates that he would only study with graduates of Princeton, Harvard, and Yale, came within a hair's breadth of creating a quantum singularity of irony on national television by comprehensively failing to comprehend the moral of a very simple children's story. Green Eggs and Ham is not a dense tome. Its moral is not impenetrable. One assumes Mr. Cruz grappled with naughtier themes and theories during his foray through the Ivy League, and yet there he was, standing on his hind legs like an actual human, thoroughly blowing it for all to see. Of course, he's referencing the fact that the parable, or the story, I guess, of Green Eggs and Ham
is exactly about an asshole like him.
Yes.
I mean, it's exactly about, and I'm for the rest of this broadcast, whether they can play it on regular radio or not, I'm just going to refer to him as an asshole, because I don't think the word asshole was invented more properly
for
any person than this guy. He is just an asshole. In every way you can be an asshole, he's an asshole.
All right, and you got to just send a note to Cliff's radio station.
I'm writing Washington right now just saying, Cliff will be saying asshole.
Okay, if I'm going to get myself in trouble. Maybe I should just shut the hell up. Can I say that? I don't know. In any case, I mean, the fact that the guy could sit up there and read a story, and the whole story is about somebody who refuses to try somebody something because they're an arrogant, I won't say the word, and then they do and find out they're wrong. Like, there's just no irony left out there anymore, is there? And I got to tell you a little personal peek there, because Mr. Princeton there, you know, he wouldn't study with any of the minor Ivies. He named Penn, which, of course, is where I went to school. So I'm going to beat the living snot out of him if I ever see him. Show him what Penn grads do to little Princeton wimps like him.
I should say, in 2007, Princeton graduates, 47% of the graduating class went into the financial services industry. Just an FYI. I just thought
shocker.
A fun fact. I mean,
I don't want to get started because I'm sure there are some very nice people who listen to your show, maybe a few of them who went to Princeton, but they were our rival, and I hate them. I hate everything about them. Ted Cruz is like the embodiment of a Princeton grad. You know what I mean? Don't get me started. I'll let it go from there.
No, you're already started, Cliff. I mean, let's face it. You've already been started here. But well, I mean, here's, you know, I want to talk about this because this is, you know, I spoke to Chris Hayes about this last night, and I really think that this part of the story has not been borne out. You have Ted Cruz. He was attacked by everyone from Senator Corker to Peter King in the Republican Party. He's being attacked by other congressmen in the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And my theory is that, you know, these guys have all been craven. They have created this Frankenstein, in part being this sort of literally this Obamacare-phobia, which is, you know, there are rational complaints about Obamacare, without a doubt, but they have created a completely fictional Obamacare with fictional implications.
No, the McConnell thing. I'll just quickly interject and let you go. You know, I don't mean to interrupt, but
no,
it's the McConnell thing. It's the worst legislation in 50 years, and it will destroy our government and our economy as the way we know it, kind of like what Reagan said about Medicare and Republicans said about Social Security for years, and you can go on and on. And when they do that and they turn it into something that literally is a matter of life and death, like 9/11, which is essentially what they're doing, like, you know, the Cold War or anything like that, then they can't live up to it. because they don't realize that most of the people they're dealing with are the kinds of dumb rubes that go to news, you know, that go to Town Hall and Newsmax and buy like penis enlargers when they send those to their email list online. You know, you probably saw Rick Perlstein's great piece on that, how all these old people that read all these crappy right-wing magazines like Human Events, they're just a list of people to be conned with gold and cancer cures. And so, of course, they're going to believe these are not smart people. They are dumb, and they're going to believe what you tell them. And when you tell them that this is the worst legislation in 50 years, supported by the Kenyan Islamo-fascist black president that's going to come to your house and take your guns away while a UN helicopter blows up your golf course, you know, you're going to freak out about it and think, oh, my God, we have to do anything to stop it. But then you suddenly notice that the guys who said all that aren't doing everything to stop it. And what's going to be the end result of that?
And to further this, you know, I've said for a long time that the Republican base is the Frankenstein that these politicians have created. But in many respects, you know, Ted Cruz is actually that Frankenstein. I mean, he was ushered in on that wave. He is their Frankenstein. And now you're seeing Dr. Frankenstein saying to their creation, you know, okay, granted, we put in a brain in your head that we dug up from a grave and we sewed together patches of dead people's skin onto you to create you. But what are you doing now? Going through
right.
the, why are you acting this way? And,
right. I mean, that's the thing. It's sort of like for years, here's sort of the evolution of the Republican Party and the conservative right, which is, you know, pretty much in the 50s and 60s when the whole conservative, you know, counter-establishment revolt started, you had these same crazy people, but most of them were your grassroots people who stuck to what they were supposed to do from the view of Republican elites. You know, you freaked them out, and what they did is they knocked on doors, and they responded to your direct mail by sending $10 and not eating that week, you know, and doing things like that. There were some of the right-wing, you know, gazillionaires. Like now there was Robert Welch, the candy guy who helped found the John Birch Society. And there, you know, there was Papa Koch back then. But they mostly told those guys to shut up, and mostly they listened because the media was still a place that was controlled, where Fox News couldn't exist, where there was a fairness doctrine. But then they encroached, you know, in 1988, August of 1988, when Rush Limbaugh kicked off his show, then – you had this downward descent where these crazy people who had once only been the base people, your base who you talked to at home, now they had a lot more power because they were in the media. And they could make you look bad, and they could make you look weak, and they could call you names if you didn't follow, and that just grew and grew and grew. And we've now reached the final evolution of this, whereas now they're not only the base and not only the media, they are actually in your party's caucuses in the House and the Senate and governors or whatever. They are the actual people who are standing up and making, well, theoretically making policy. They're not, obviously. And so, you know, you in a way, it's been this three-stage process, and now they're just completely screwed. Because not only do you have to deal with the guy who's sending the letters to your office calling you a wimp, not only do you have to deal now with Rush Limbaugh and all the little Limbaugh clones and people on Fox calling you a wimp, now you've got on the same Senate floor you're standing up on, you've got Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and a couple other lunatics calling you that. And so that's where they are. They created this thing, they grew it, and it's now completely, you know, it was sort of the small part of the party, and now it's sort of threatened to take over the entire thing, and really pretty much has.
Yeah, and the interesting thing here is that it is Ted Cruz has sort of out-cravened the Craveners, as it were. I mean, you know, I'm making up new words here, but this is a dynamic that is, to me, it's just fascinating. They're upset at him because they have created this sort of playing field, and this guy comes in and he is so suited for this playing field, and playing on it and exploiting it even more is to his benefit. So he is beating them at their own despicable game. I mean, we were joking in the office. I think I said some of this on the Better Half, but it's as if, you know, You've got these people just, you know, Ted Cruz is saying out there, like, you're not sufficiently conservative enough. And these conservatives are saying, like, I was denying children food and health care when you were in your diapers. You know, like, you're talk about going into to see Star Wars. There's a reason why you inhaled so much mercury in your lungs while you walked into that theater. It is because I fought against clean air regulations. And you know, it's like, at long last, sir, you have you no lack of a lack of decency for calling me out and saying that I'm not conservative enough. And it's fascinating. And the fundamental thing that I think that is lost in all of this, and Lee Fong, I mentioned this last night when I was on Hayes' show, Lee Fong has a piece out that I think doesn't even go far enough in making this case, but it outlines just how lucrative of an endeavor this is for...
That's exactly right. That's kind of that final evolution, too, which is when you basically, and Public Policy Polling just sent out a tweet saying they're going to have a poll coming out later today where they'll be showing that Republicans now view Ted Cruz as the party's leader. Mind you, the guy would have trouble, if he becomes a Republican nominee, getting 180 electoral votes, as Michael Tomasky wrote the other day at the Daily Beast, because he'll so offend everybody, and quite frankly, everyone hates him. And I wrote a book about a guy like that in 2008. When your entire party hates you, it's kind of hard to motivate anybody to help you in any way. It's easier now because the grassroots likes it when you're not establishment, much more obviously. But still, I don't see him going anywhere, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's sort of the same path that Sarah Palin took. This is the path now that essentially, if you just want to set yourself up on the gravy train of the right wing speaking circuit, big corporate, you know, speeches and with right wing CEOs and right wing issue groups that raise small amounts of money from all of their people and then rip them off and use it to pay people like Sarah Palin to show up, and you want to get a TV gig on Fox or your own talk radio show. I mean, Mike Huckabee, another example of someone who did this. This is, you know, the end destination is really not the presidency anymore or anything like that. The end destination is pay dirt.
Yeah,
Glenn Kane has a radio show. You know, I mean, you can go on and on. You look through the guys that ran in 2012, my guess is you'd find half to two, or in 2008, you'd find half to two thirds of that whole bunch now have some sort of lucrative gigs, speaking, writing books that nobody cares about, but right wing, you know, think tanks buy in bulk and all the rest of the stuff. You know, I mean, that's the gig.
And I don't think it's, and the thing is, I don't think this, the, what we're seeing is just a function of that, that attitude of the leaders that we know of. I think that this dynamic has permeated the entire apparatus of the right in this country. I mean, you know, it was just reported last week that the Koch brothers had another slush fund, essentially, of $250 million, right? And so you're talking about billions of dollars that are flowing through this entire ecosystem. And one thing that, you know, that Lee wrote was that, that Ted Cruz has gone around to the Tea Party Express. He did a lot of speeches in building this up. They are sharing email lists, et cetera, et cetera. They raised $2.1 million this year, and they spent all of it on campaign consultants and fundraising fees. In other words, for every one Ted Cruz you see, there are literally hundreds of people who are the sort of the bureaucratic operatives of this apparatus who are all getting paid by this. When you see that right. ad that the Koch brothers funded, you know, the Generation New, you know, the rapey ads, there's a lot of people who are making money off of this. It's the same dynamic as those people who are sucking money out of guys like Foster Freeze and I think the yep. guy who owned the Cubs.
Yeah, the Ameritrade guy who you saw that proposal that was sent
exactly.
to him that was exposed about, and it was all about how, you know, we bring Reverend Wright back and all this sort of stuff. And you just can imagine the hundreds, if not thousands, of these proposals flying around to right-wing nuts, because in the end, maybe deep down these guys know this, I don't know, but they're not going to make the federal government unless they do something like take it over the way they want it to be. And when I say take it over, I mean by non-democratic means. But what they can do is they feel better. People like Ted Cruz make them feel better because he tells all those sissy liberals exactly what they wish they could tell all those sissy liberals when there's, you know, and that's the next best thing.
Well, let's break this down even further. Okay. I mean, it used to be that you would see this type of money in politics because it would formulate policy in a way that would benefit those large donors, right? But the donors are still getting what they want out of government. They are still seeing that they're certainly winning on in terms of a lot of states across the country. And you now have an apparatus that is, these people have all been motivated. I mean, you know, how many of these people, if they are not true believers, if they're not genuine fanatics, are Republicans because they don't want to pay taxes? And, you know, they may be paying taxes, or they aren't actually. I mean, they're still paying sort of historically low rates. But at the same time, if they're driven by this accumulation of money, their agenda, you know, because I'm on a couple of lists where some of the sort of the more establishment left to center types are still like, is this the end of the Tea Party? Are they finally going to gain their sanity and realize that they're hurting their party's national aspirations? Of course not. Because they didn't have aspirations for the Republican Party, but for how much the Republican Party could put dollars in their pockets. And they're getting more dollars in their pockets than they ever had by pursuing these.
You have the corrupt sort of grassroots leaders who are profit, you know, and they're not real grassroots folk, like the Dick Armies, who got paid, what, $400,000 a year for the next 20 years to walk away from FreedomWorks.
Indeed.
Whatever the hell else he got. So you're getting people getting hugely wealthy off of this. But at the same time, again, it has to go back to the fact that you've got a lot of genuinely angry, very, very scared people. These are the people that who cling to their guns and religion, to coin a phrase. Last night on the show, you may be familiar with or may not, Virtually Speaking, which is on, Jay Ackroyd does a great job with, and others. I interviewed David Nyward about his book, In Hell Followed With Her, which was about the murder of, great book, by the way, everyone, about the murder of this young Hispanic girl and her father.
David was on the other day on this program.
Okay, so then people are well aware of it. And we talked about how, because David is in a way, David Nyward has chronicled and followed this, which is one of these crazy right-wing movements burns out, but then another one pops up. As you know, the media is so gullible and dumb and doesn't feel like doing research that they're like, oh, look, the Tea Party. People must be really angry, as if it came from nowhere. Well, before that, you had the Minutemen, and before that, you had the Patriot Movement.
Moral majority, the same thing.
Right. These groups, they just, one of them blows up. And then the next one starts with an equally benign name, you know, Tea Party, Patriot Movement, you gotta love it, Minutemen, they're all such wonderful people. And the Minutemen thing with this murder that took place in Arizona helped sort of bring down the Minutemen, not to mention one of the founders then got caught molesting children, and another of the, you know, and I mean, because these people inevitably are all, or the vast majority of them are criminals, and they're con artists, but if people think the Tea Party is going to go away, sure, the Tea Party could come crashing down in terms of the Tea Party, but then something else will spring up, because there always is a market among scared, crazy, you know, angry old white people who see the world changing around them and can't accept it. There's always going to be a market for this, you know, for the Sarah Palins and Ted Cruz's and others to appeal to. So if it's not the Tea Party, then it'll be called something else. But something else will rise up.
Indeed,
it's inevitable.
And again, you know, I keep harping on this, but I really think that there's just not enough attention paid to it. If people perceive this. I mean, you know, and one of the things that, you know, we've talked about in this program over the years is that, you know, the mistake that people make is that corporations, they feel that the CEO and the board of directors function in the best interest of the corporation, as if the corporation was this sort of one entity instead of their own individual best interests, which are very at times very much misaligned with the best interests of the long-term future of a corporation. For instance, if you're a CEO and your board of directors is your buddy, of course, and you get these bonuses, that's why we see these extraordinary bonuses based on stock prices and on options and whatnot. It misaligns the agenda of the corporate's leadership with the long-term health of the corporation, which would involve also its workers and the community it's in and its market and its consumers, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I think that the Republican Party has now been captured by the same dynamic where those who are running the levers, who are exploiting those rubes and those angry white guys who've always been there, these people now, They are just operating in what is the best interest of me. And that is a misalignment. And you see the same dynamic in terms of, you know, the congressmen who may be, who have their districts locked up. They don't need to worry about the national aspirations of the party,
right,
because this is what they're doing. But I am convinced this is also the case with the vast right wing conspiracy now. And by that, I just mean, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, the Heritage Foundation, Hillsdale College, the Koch brothers, the AFP, the Freedom Works, the Freedom Express, all these things. I mean, go on and on. America, America. America's freedom of America.
America, freedom, liberty, America, for America. Freedom, America.
Family of freedom, America. All of the literally the thousands upon thousands of people who are working in these outfits, they're all getting paid in a way they never got paid before. And that same sort of dynamic is functioning there, where they are maybe driven by a certain ideology, but it's not necessarily the triumph of this ideology. It is the triumph of their own bank account. And
yeah.
And it has become so lucrative. There's so much money there, that money that we on the left have always envied, in some ways is now sort of, it is causing their failure. You have all of those people working in their own self-interest, and it is enhancing their own self-interest. But it is in some ways making, you know, assuring that their party becomes more and more marginalized and more regionalized. But in the meantime, segueing into what could happen over the next 2 or 3 weeks, when we now know that the debt ceiling limit is going to be breached October 17th, they may take the rest of the country down with, in the meantime.
That's exactly right. And that's the problem, again, is that their self-interest doesn't align well, the self-interest of the loons. And again, with some of those guys, it's all about the money in the bank account. With other ones, they're just literally people, again, when they make some of the, they give us some of the warnings of impending doom and apocalypse, they could just be one of these crazy people standing out in Times Square. And some of them really should be those people, and yet somehow have been elected. I mean, Steve Stockman should just be a crazy person standing out somewhere, you know, and he actually represents people in Congress. It's rather amazing. And so they don't care either. I mean, bringing down the United States government, hell, half these people probably expect that they'll get raptured up when that happens. So, you know, that is the problem, is that there's not really people you can negotiate with here. You just have to hope in some way that some common sense, if that's humanly possible, run, and especially in the House, runs through some of the people there that still have some of their faculties about them, and realize that this could be a major, major blow to this country to do this, to bring this country down by their nihilism. And that they can ditch the Hastert rule, and you can just get enough of these guys to join with Democrats so something gets done. But I mean, who the hell knows what that something is going to be? I mean, this stuff is so ridiculous now that this is exhausting. You know, that we have to go through this every year over the debt ceiling, and we're gonna have to go through this constantly over budgets. And I mean, this is just ridiculous. This is not the way modern countries are governed. It's just not.
Adam, Amanda Turkle and Dave Jamieson have a piece in the Huffington Post which outlines just how demoralized government workers have become and how they're living in constant anxiety. I mean, you know, we have a lot of people who obviously listen to this program who have been going through their own financial insecurity. But just imagine if at work you were told, I mean, basically it's this is something that really I think you can only experience if you're working in the federal government now or had been at Air America for a couple of years. The idea that you don't know 3 months from now if you're going to have a job. You don't know if 3 months from now you're going to get furloughed for no reason. You don't know if 3 months from now your work is going to be your paycheck's going to bounce. There's a lot of people who are suffering in the federal government who are basically saying that they would never recommend anybody work in the federal government. It's not exactly a glamorous life. The benefits for working in the federal government was some measure of security, some measure of decent benefits, and those
maybe
things
maybe measure
of seeing
you
threatened.
Actually were doing something good, you know, yep. Which is now being demonized by an entire party and yep. An entire movement, and even some wimps in the other party who give in.
And one of the things as we get close to this, I mean, it's funny, you know, the commentary ranges from. Hopefully there'll be a government shutdown so that the Republicans will sort of like get it out of their system and they won't mess with the debt ceiling limit. I mean, it seems to me that
but they're going to do that inevitably. That's why I kind of just combine both of them into one.
Well, I think Boehner is doing that too. I think he's sort of punting because he's trying. You know, Boehner's number one agenda is to hold on to his House leadership position. Hopefully, some financial services company will call him up and say, look, your time is done. Just get the debt ceiling raised. Just do it, please. And we'll promise you you're going to have a nice lucrative job, which will involve, you know, a 7 hour
year as a lobbyist. We'll have a tanning machine in your office.
7 hour liquid lunch. And
right. Literally, when you walk in the office, there'll be a computerized hand that will reach up and stuff a cigarette into your mouth. this is a perfect place for Boehner. They'd be like, our goal is to see if we can have at least two of your organs become cancer filled within 2 years.
The my biggest fear, though, with this, Cliff, is, all right, this is what I have heard. I mean, this you can read Jonathan Chait has written something like this. This is what I've heard from people who know people in the White House. I know no one in the White House, but I know people in the White House.
Right. That's where I am, too. If they're actually currently in the White House, they wouldn't want to know me.
Indeed.
When they leave, they're willing to talk to me again.
What I have heard is that President Obama and Jonathan Chait has a piece where he sort of lays this out. That one thing that President Obama understands, or two things, is one, he made a dramatic mistake in 2011 negotiating over the debt ceiling.
That's exactly right.
Two, that he knows that it is crucial for his legacy as a president relative to the institution that he does not negotiate with the debt ceiling, because if he does, this will be a regular occurrence for generations to come. And
sadly, I think he's already done that. It's made this a precedent.
Well,
and
that's
all of us
the
who
thing.
Sat there and got pissed at him at the time were all like, mint the giant coin or
right.
Use the constitutional option. Do what Republicans would do, which there are things available to you that you know you can do. And when you're dealing with people that are completely unreasonable and are willing to bring down the government, then those are times when you lead and you do those things.
Well, there's a third option for him, and that is. Let them actually do this. Let it actually happen and hope that within 24 hours when we're in some type of financial crisis, they turn around and they've destroyed the party and he has buried this once and for all. But there's also a fourth option that I don't see anybody contemplating, which worries me. It's something we have talked about in the past. I may be, you know, this may be another case of me being, you know, chicken little. But
Benghazi.
But there are two pieces that I've seen in the past couple of days that lead me to be concerned about the prospect of a fourth option here. The first two options being mint the coin. The second option being cite constitutional authority. The third one being, you know, just don't negotiate. Let the Republicans do this and hope that something saves them from doing it. The fourth option is this. Knowing that and stipulating that President Obama feels it's part of his legacy to make sure this debt ceiling negotiations doesn't continue. There's one other thing that he could do, which really scares me. And
Social Security was never meant to be a program anyhow. It's optional.
Close. There was a piece in Bloomberg the other day that said that some of the Republicans see the possibility of replacing automatic cuts, the sequester, with reductions to entitlement spending, okay? And Cornyn said, since the president himself has proposed some of these things, he's talking about cutting Medicare and cutting Social Security, it would seem logical that he would not turn that down. There was also an interview in BuzzFeed of senior White House advisor Dan Pfeiffer this was an interview on CNN, comparing the GOP to terrorists.
Yeah, I saw what he said.
And he said,
we offered entitlements.
We're for cutting spending. We are for cutting, reforming tax codes, reforming out entitlements. What we're not for is negotiating with people with a bomb strapped to their chest. We're not going to do that. Now, they're not negotiating on the debt ceiling limit because they don't want to set a precedent. What scares me is the deal. We are willing to statutorily change the reoccurrence of a debt ceiling vote for your desire to cut Social Security and Medicare via the CPI or whatever they do. That, I think it's highly unlikely, but that to me is out there. And I feel that if I've contemplated it, they're contemplating it.
They have. They will see such a revolt from the left if they do that. You know, there's a story in the Wall Street Journal about the new kind of power of the left. I mean, some interesting things have been going on lately. You know, I sort of pointed out how the grassroots right has gotten their crazy people into Congress. Well, it turns out the grassroots left have actually gotten some of our sane people in there.
Yeah.
Which is why Larry Summers isn't headed off to a job he's completely ill-suited for. And I swear to God, if they go down this road again, if they make this stupid, stupid proposal again, there's going to be a lot of us who are going to be screaming at them about it. And, I mean, you know, that's what they want. If he wants his entire base to ditch him for the next couple of years of his presidency, then go do this then.
When I see things like talk of punting all of this, doing the continuing resolution for another month and a half, seeing if they can get an extension on the debt ceiling for another month and a half, taking this to mid-December, whenever I see the Democrats agreeing or floating the idea of punting this into December, that is like the, you know, we used to, on the old Majority Report, Janine and I used to talk about the one cheek sneak on a Friday, where you sort of the one cheek sneak being, of course, where you try and do a silent but deadly on a Friday evening so that nobody can smell it because you're over the weekend. Those last 2 weeks in December is the sort of the one cheek sneak writ large. And I get really worried about when we start hearing Democrats saying, let's punt this into December, because that means that they want to do something that they don't really want to be held account for. And so, you know,
you can't talk to us. It's Christmas time.
Exactly.
Bye.
Yeah. We'll see you in a couple of weeks after you've had a lot to drink. And
that's right.
That always scares me because the Democrats have the leverage in this fight. If the Republicans are going to drive us off the cliff, better to do it in October than in December. Because that's when you're going to see the media, really talk about it. So, we will have the same conversation next week, but we will have different facts set, to give us a better sense of where we're going. You know.
Always interesting times, aren't they?
Indeed. Cliff Schechter, so glad we have you on Fridays to talk about it. Thanks again, Cliff.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on, Sammy.
All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We're going to rejigger the confines of this studio. For those of you who are having trouble watching live video on the app, it is because we have yet to shift back. Am I right, Matt, about this? To our primary feed. We had a problem with all the technical stuff last week. I'm not going to bore you with it. We're going to do so probably by Monday. We should be able to do so. So you can go to the site, or you can go to youtube.com/Sam Cedar, and you should be able to pick up the live feed there, I believe. Or you can go to majority.fm to pick up the live video.
If you're on the app, instead of clicking the live link that we have set up, which goes to the Majority Report live account, you could just go to the YouTube account where you usually watch the videos after the show, the ones we cut up, and that will have the live feed.
So just look to YouTube on the app. Forget the live stuff. Just look to YouTube, and you will, in fact, find the live feed there. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, joining me in studio, the wonderful Isabel Gillies. We'll be right back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. We have a special guest in studio this week for a movie selection. But of course, before we hear from her, we need to hear first her theme song.
Yes, we do.
Did you forget it?
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, in studio, live in studio, Isabel Gillies.
Aloha.
You got to talk into the mic, Isabel. That's
okay.
Can you
Here
get there?
Here we go.
Can
Don't
you get
have to
there?
Tell me twice to talk into a mic. There we go.
You got
to
speak up a little bit.
I do, even still?
That's good.
Here,
That's good.
What if I went like this? How about that?
That's great. Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen,
Hello.
Joining us
Hello.
In...
My
gosh, making the studio...
This is my favorite. This is my favorite.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You know, we're having another guest in studio on Monday. I was inspired by your arrival here. Matt Taibbi is going to be here with us.
It's so much better being here than being on the phone by 100,000%.
Really? And why do you say that?
A, you get to walk through the garment district.
Right.
Which is fun. And I'm going to be getting some curtain hooks.
Now, you know it's not visual medium.
Curtain hooks later. There are 100 little tiny stores that have material and trimmings because I've been making my own curtains.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
In an effort to
best-selling
save a little
author money. makes her own curtains.
Yeah. It's not easy. It's not easy.
I understand.
It's really hard. And there's a lot of pressure. So that's one thing. And the other thing is being on the phone is difficult and you're at home and being here is cool and it's just better by a lot.
And now it's just come up on your iPhone.
Hey!
You can actually download the Majority Report app and you'll be able to listen to the program.
Free.
For free.
Install.
Yeah. There you go. Boom.
Boom.
One of the other benefits of being here, Isabel, is of course that you can go out and you can get lunch for a dollar. You want to get a burger for a buck? You can do that. You want to
get
a
burger for a buck? I don't know if I want a burger for
a buck. I don't think you do. But the pizza for a dollar is actually quite good.
Pizza all over the place is a dollar. Where is pizza not a dollar?
Everywhere else.
But in this area.
$2.50?
No, I'm saying literally a dollar.
Then you get two slices?
You can get two slices for $2.
wait.
When I was growing up, pizza was a dollar. And that's how I think of it. So whenever I buy a slice, I think I'm paying a dollar, even if it's four.
Yeah, it usually is about four.
That's
the deal.
That's great. I don't know why you're making your own curtains in that case, because sure, curtains were quite cheap.
Because if
back
I make my own curtains, then I can buy $4 pizza and not worry about it and not have to come down to the garment district.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Because I'll come down here for banchan, and we already talked about that.
I had the banchan after. Did I tell you that?
No.
There's a banchan. Have you guys ever had that banchan?
Yes, we tried it once.
Yeah.
As a result of Isabel's plugging it pretty hard.
It was good. It was a little bit much.
What? Fried chicken? How much? What do you mean, too much?
I didn't get the fried chicken. I got, like, the plate. And the plate tasted a bit like, you know, the meat you just get off the street, but not as good as the meat you get off the street.
But you didn't get wings?
I didn't get wings.
Maybe well, that was
get a
the
big,
wings.
Huge, fat mistake.
That's what I got to try.
The wings are the only thing that
the wings. The wings.
All right. Well, there it is. Banchan, folks.
Banchan,
I mean, this
garment
is sort of
district.
Really compelling stuff that we got going
Listen
on here.
Listen to me. The garment district is compelling.
Now, Isabel, we have not talked to you since she's raising her arms, folks, in victory. Isabel Gillies is one of the first Bill de Blasio fans that, back in the day, back when he was down like around 12%, Isabel was coming on singing the praises of Bill de Blasio. I ran into Bill de Blasio on, I think it was Up with Steve or something. And I said, you know, I'm friends with Isabel Gillies. And he was like, yeah, wow, she's a super fan. Like, yeah, okay. he seemed almost like he was a little nervous.
Well, here's the other thing about that's funny. First of all, I love Bill de Blasio. I think he's going to be a great mayor. And he just feels like a mayor. If you're around him, he's tall and he feels like a mayor. I'm standing with the mayor. That's what it feels like. So
all
that's
right.
Good. And New York is a pendulum. And, you know, I think that everybody actually, or 70% of the people, did appreciate and like what Bloomberg did. And now they just want someone else to. It is 70%. There's a poll. It was 70%. They're like, he did a great job. Now he wants someone else to do a great job. And the nature of New York, having lived here for 43 years.
There you go.
Is it's a pendulum. You got to get, you know, have a Republican in there doing some things. And then it swings back and you have a Democrat or even a progressive Democrat in there. And then it swings back again because New York is there are a lot of different kinds of people here.
But it's really, New York has changed dramatically from the city that you grew up in. I mean, New York at that time, I mean, aside from the financial woes, but there was give me your perspective on this because, you know, I would come down to visit. I was born down here. My family had a lot of roots here. And so I would visit. I have family friends here. But my sense is that New York was in many respects a more interesting place.
Well, it was funky. It was funky. My dad used to sing something called when we'd drive in and pass Broadway and he'd say, funky, funky Broadway.
I don't know why we're getting that. Are you getting that? interference
funky,
somebody's
funky
phones.
Broadway. What, is there something weird happening? Should
yeah,
I turn
your
my phone off?
Yeah, that would be good, actually.
Okay. Ready?
I'm not sure
that.
Why your phone is causing
problems.
Because
there's problems. A battery pack on it.
That's. I don't think that's it, but
well,
shut it down and see if that does it.
Put
I did
it outside. Okay, so funky, funky Broadway. It was funky. The Upper West Side, which now looks like a mall.
Yeah.
Was cobblers, butchers, tiny little bodegas, million different looking kind of people. A little dangerous, has to be said.
The subway station that, you know, now is like populated with nannies was Needle Park.
Right. It was dangerous. And I could never walk down anything but a big avenue, like 86th Street, 79th Street, 72nd Street. Oh, you could see, you really could, if you lived on the Upper West Side, see John Lennon and Yoko Ono walking around all the time. It was just a different, funkier, dirtier, for sure. The park was pretty disgusting.
Central Park.
Now the meadow, Sheep's Meadow, looks like something out of Downton Abbey. And back then, it was a dust bowl with probably drug addicts and hippies,
and
me.
but that also had implications in terms of how interesting the city was. I mean, it
yeah.
seems to me. I mean, I nobody's coming here. If you're an artist,
you
can't live in. Not just now the borough of Manhattan.
You can't even live in Gowanus.
It's getting crazy.
It is crazy. And I was looking at what an apartment cost in Harlem, way up in West Harlem. It was so expensive. I mean, when I was being a young actress here, it was probably four times as much with inflation than I was paying, for sure.
Yeah.
In like way up in Harlem.
It's to a large extent, some of the policies that Bloomberg has pursued has added
enhanced
to that,
that.
And
yes.
exacerbated that.
And de Blasio, I think, is going to equalize that because he really, truly is interested in making every neighborhood in all the boroughs of vibrant with business and with the schools. I mean, I do think that he's going to rebalance it.
He's also – In your recollection, I don't know New York politics well enough, but when was the last time we had an outer borough mayor?
No, I don't think was Dinkins?
No, Dinkins from Harlem.
Dinkins was from Harlem.
What about what about LaGuardia?
Well, I mean, now we're going back, you know.
I don't know, but certainly not Koch, right?
I don't think Koch.
Koch from, I think, like the Village or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is relevant.
Sure.
I mean, the growing up in the outer boroughs, it's a different experience. I think I would imagine, or at least
oh, for sure, especially if he was Brooklyn in the 70s. I mean,
Well, I don't know that he grew up there.
I
think
he grew up
in Cambridge,
here.
Massachusetts. And
oh,
I think
that's
he
right.
Came,
he did.
He came here probably around that time.
He
but
did. And
even,
Cambridge, Massachusetts, actually in the 70s, was probably a lot like.
Brooklyn and
Manhattan in some ways.
Yes, that's very possible, actually. Cambridge was an interesting place as late as I was there. It's sort of changed in some respects.
Yeah, but. I lived there. It was a little funky. I wasn't in Harvard Square. Okay, here's another thing.
Oh, really? Where'd you live?
In the other square down by MIT.
In Central Square?
Yeah, I lived a little
what off were you doing
Central
there?
Square. My ex-husband was a professor at Harvard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and believe you me, I did not like Cambridge, okay? Sorry.
Why didn't you like Cambridge?
Frumpy pilgrims. Judgmental mothers.
Really?
Yes.
I had
lonely.
No idea.
I was lonely. I was cold.
Wait, when were you there?
I was there in 2001.
I had no idea.
Yeah, sure. People in the parks, they judge you if you just even, I don't even know. Anything you do, it was very judgmental, I felt, and very... Just, I didn't like Cambridge.
Where did you live?
I lived on Hamilton Street.
I don't know where that was. But.
And we lived next to a cool Irish guy and his wife who had two cute kids, and he owned one
of the
big...
The Irish are so judgmental.
No, he wasn't judgmental. He owned one of the big bars, like a Phoenix Rising or something like that.
Oh, I know that
bar. And he...
On Mass Ave.
Yeah, on Mass Ave. And he, on St. Patrick's Day, left on all the neighbors, this I did like about it, it was a little neighbory, on all of our doorsteps, shamrocks. You know, real live clover.
Well, there you go.
So that was sort of wicked cool.
Unneighborly.
Wicked
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, really sounds yeah. judgmental and unneighborly. I think maybe...
I know. I don't mean to, maybe you know, need offend to take a look at the all of the Northeast.
I mean...
all of Massachusetts.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like maybe you were the problem, Isabel. I mean,
I could have been.
Respect.
I never say I'm not a problem.
No, well, I mean, that's...
I just didn't like it so much. You know when you like a city or not, within 15 minutes of being in there. I love Providence. I love Providence. I would live in Providence in a second.
You really? Like Providence more than Cambridge?
That's
Yo,
weird.
Yeah,
that
by
is
a lot.
Real credibility dampener. Over
Absolutely.
Here, I gotta say.
Where
when did you
from?
Live in Providence?
I went to RISD.
Oh, that's right. Wow, that was back in the day when Benny, what's his name?
Buddy Cianci.
Yeah, Cianci. That's right. That's right.
Can I ask a New
Another
York City
funky
question
place.
For you? It was is Mayor Dinkins as bad as people say, or is that a myth?
You know, I don't have that kind of telescope back to that time because I was very self-involved. Let's see what the years were.
No.
I was in a self-involved time in my life. It was like I was 13. What time?
Talking
what years?
About.
You got to leave my machine up. But
when I was trying to figure out what was wrong with the cell phone, I turned it all down.
Okay.
You were 13.
What?
In
1990? When was Dinkins? Oh, no, sorry, I was 20.
Wasn't he like...
I was in college. You know, I don't...
Oh, but you were in college in Providence. You, yeah.
I wasn't really in... I don't think he was that now, bad. I don't think he was very strong, and I think de Blasio is strong.
Now, was that when you were pulled out of... Were you pulled out of school to do...
Metropolitan? Yes.
That's it. Isabel got her start in one of the most sort of... I think one of the most acclaimed and... famous of the independent films in that
and
era,
the first.
Metropolitan, by what's his name?
Whit Stillman.
And was Eigenman in that?
Yes. Chris Eigenman.
Does he now live up in like the Hudson Valley or something?
I don't know. Yeah. That would be nice.
It would be nice.
It was made for $200,000. I had no idea what I was doing. In fact, in one scene in the movie, I'm sitting next to Chris Eigenman, who's this great actor, and he was saying his lines. And if you look at me, I'm mouthing his words.
Well, but yeah, you played that off. You don't need to.
I was 18.
There you go.
I was a young kid. You know, I didn't know, and no one knew. Independent film did not exist.
This was
1989.
Yeah, this is like before Sex Lies and Videotape
yep.
got so big. It was.
I think Sundance was its first year, perhaps, or second year. It was. Yeah, and then it was a big deal.
And who else? Who else was in that movie?
Caroline Farina, Allison Rutledge Parisi, Dylan Hundley.
Did any of these people go on to continue acting careers?
Not really. A little bit, but not really. Chris Eigenman did a little bit.
Eigenman did what? What is that? What are you saying?
You're
over
laughing a little bit over there, bud.
No, I was just saying I have not heard of any of these people. Unfortunately,
no.
It's embarrassing.
No. Well, I think Allison became a big lawyer.
Really?
We were babies, you know, and it
18 years old.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We shot in, from the middle of the night at midnight until 6 in the morning, and it was cold, and we ate Teddy Grahams only.
And what did your parents say about this?
My parents were like, they read. See, the script was really good. So if you read the script, it was kind of like reading a novel. You were like, well, this isn't pornography, you know. This is.
So your parents were willing to let you do anything to get out of college?
No. Hey, ready for this? I didn't. First of all, it was winter session. So winter session means that there's like a sort of less than session. So there's first semester, then second semester, and in the middle, there's 6 weeks where.
Who's ever heard of this? What kind of school is RISD?
Some schools shut down. Bennington shuts down. It used to be to save money for fuel. And you could do like, you can do an alternate kind of course, right?
Uh-huh.
And so. I turned the film down at first because I got into a really good photography class, and they were like, you can't turn the film down, said the director to me. And I was like, well, I don't know. I got into this good photography class. And he's like, well, we shoot from midnight until 6. So my mother said, just go from midnight until 6, and then at 6, get in a car and go up to your class at 9. And I did that.
Up to Providence?
Yes, sir.
That's insane.
But I was 18, so I had all this fire and, you know.
I know. When I was back in the day, I was making money by driving cars
from my uncle who owned a car dealership in Worcester down to Florida and back in like 52 hours. And I was like, I'm making $250 bucks in 52 hours. Are you kidding me? That's $20 an hour. Or maybe it was less. I
didn't
guess.
Even make, I yeah. made, I made
Jeez, it was five
70.
All right, well, I was never very good at business. But I like to drive. I like to drive.
You had the illusion of making fun.
I would just get into a car. It was like some Buick, you know, for some snowbird. And I would drive down, and then I would bring up a car for a dealer. And I would just, like, I would have this bag of chocolate espresso beans. And I'd just be going down 95, just, like, chomping on these things. I'd sleep for, like, 20 minutes in a rest stop.
It's amazing you're alive, actually.
There was a couple of times where I was, like, a little bit blurry-eyed.
Having to do that.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do it again, and I certainly wouldn't let my kid do it.
No. I made $70 a day, $50 deferred. So I was making $20 a day.
Oh, did you ever see that 50? You must have, right?
I think it, yeah, big $1,200 came in at some point.
Because that film did that, not it, bad.
No, the film did, but we signed away everything.
You guys.
Nah.
And did you ever hear from Slim Whitman again?
Slim Whitman?
What's his name again?
Whit Stillman. Whit Stillman. Yeah, I heard from him again. He made more movies that I was not in.
Wow. And was that always a bone of contention?
Well, I kind of feel like maybe he didn't think. I don't know. Certain other cast members were in them.
Really? Like
Chris and Taylor.
Oh, right. They did one like Barcelona or
something?
Yeah,
Barcelona,
like
Last Days of Disco. I don't know. I was, you know, maybe didn't think I was so good.
Ah, well, he probably ate his words when Chris Eigenman is not doing anything, and you are on.
And I was on Law and Order for 12 years.
Sam doesn't even know what it's called. What it's even called?
SUV.
SVU.
Special Victims Unit. Just had its premiere.
12 years.
Just had its premiere.
I can only imagine the residuals you must get.
Oh, it's sick.
I mean, I'm telling you something. Like, I did, you know, a half a dozen Bob's Burgers as an animated character. And you don't even get to pay that much initially. But, I mean, it has subsidized this program.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't feel like, I mean, every once in a while a check will come in and I'm like, whoa, okay.
Really?
But yeah. SVU is on like 20 different stations syndicated. Like, how are
I
you
know.
Not?
It's making me feel anxious that maybe I'm missing checks or so. Once I called SAG and there's all these back checks. I don't understand residuals.
What do you mean you don't understand residuals? They send you a check and it's money.
I know, but like, how do you keep track of it?
Oh, I don't know.
Law and Order plays every minute of the day, so I should be so rich. And
I think
not.
What you need to be doing is going through TV Guide, maybe, or they still counting up the. I have no idea.
TV Guide even exists anymore?
I don't know, but can't you get a lawyer or an agent to be like, hey, am I getting my?
I don't have an agent as an actress anymore.
You don't.
No,
you've made that transition out.
Right, but now I'm writing two books at the same time.
You're reading two books at the same time.
I'm writing. Did I say
wait a second? So what's happening?
I finished my. Book
Your tweener.
Starry Night, my tweener.
How old is that for?
You know, the lead main girl is 15, so.
So Myla has got a couple more years. She's just starting to read.
There's sex in it a little bit.
She's got then closer to 15 years.
No, no. It's okay. It's. I talk to my kids about sex quite a lot.
Oh, I've talked to Myla about sex. Like, I've read that book by that guy who was the sex ed guy. We've talked, you know, he. What? What's so funny?
There's a great book called Isn't It Amazing.
She's like, listen, honey, we're going to talk about that sex ed guy's book now, all right? You understand?
But you have to talk about it.
This book recommends introducing the idea of intercourse at age, not the idea so much, but an explanation of what it is at age 6 or 7.
Yeah, right on.
Because so that when the kids get older and they start hearing all the slang about it and this and that, they're already so bored with the concept. Like
It's not boredom. It's about getting your ideas, your morals, your values, your science into their heads before anybody else.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So you say
it's all about trust. It's about
loving
relationships. You need to trust this person, this and that. There needs
Is
to be
it a
respect.
Good idea to they have need, and, sex and without a condom? No. You know, like you know, if you're, because what I said to my kids,
we haven't gotten that far.
The boys, this is what I said. I said, look, here's the deal. Your body's going to go through all these changes. You're going to be a teenager. And part of those changes are hormones coursing through your veins that are screaming to you, have sex. Screaming. You are going to want to have sex so badly. But here's the thing. When you're a teenager, do you have a job? No. Do you have a loving relationship? Probably not. Do you have a house to raise a child in? No. So what you have to do is either like get your best, you know, strength and all of your willpower and not have sex, or you have to wear a condom.
You know, it's interesting. As you were going through that whole thing about, like, do you have a loving relationship? Do you have a job? Do you have a house? I found that by the time I had those things, the hormones were completely gone. I could barely hear them even whispering anymore. They weren't just screaming. I mean, the...
I know.
All right, I'm ready now. Oh,
right.
God.
Oh, God. Now it's
just go to
now
sleep.
Just,
I know. I know. Well, because when you're supposed to be having babies, biologically, it's 15.
What?
Yeah, man. That's when your body's like, go, go, go.
You didn't know that, Sam?
Well, I knew that, I guess. I mean, I thought it was me personally, or
like kissing when you're 15 is a big signal to your brain, like, baby, baby, baby. And your body's like, yeah, give me a baby because I'll just cook it and pop it out and it'll be no problem. But when you're 39,
Nikki had a Saul when in her. I'm trying to work out the like 44.
No, I saw it. Really?
Yeah.
God Almighty.
Yeah, God Almighty.
Well, that's not easy. It's not easy.
No, it is
your
not.
Your body's like I'm winding it down here.
Right. I saw an article recently. And I apologize, I forgot the author, but the point of it was that she was basically arguing that the notion that, like, there's, you know, like 35 is when, like, women should have a baby, like an ideal cutoff date, that kind of number gets thrown around a lot.
Really? That's I've when doctors that. Say that's when your chances
well, no, and
go
she
down
was saying
like 70%.
This is all a complete misnomer, and that
completely.
There's a really that the science of when you can have kids healthfully is something that's like very contested, and there's been a lot of kind of anti-feminist, anti-women's politics wrapped up in it.
I, you know, it was interesting because Nikki was officially considered an at-risk pregnancy just based upon her age.
And that's what she's objecting to.
Right. I mean,
she's saying that you're not an at-risk pregnancy? You are.
This article I read, yes. That's
oh,
what
no,
she
no,
was
no,
saying.
No. Perhaps, but when you see the figures.
Take it from
me,
Isabel. She went to RISD.
Hey, man, I know doctors. One takes care of me.
I know nothing. I'm just listening.
No, it's because your body, you can see your FSH levels, which are your hormone levels. What? Is it,
this
is
actually,
too much information?
This is actually the sex ed talk that Michael never
Right,
never
I was
had. Never
in
Chad,
so this is all fresh.
You were not homeschooled. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it
Incidentally,
goes down.
Incidentally,
this
show will be replaying on the OWN network.
We talk about all ladies stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's not ladies.
No, it's not ladies stuff. I mean, but
it's
just
it's
because
everybody's stuff.
We both have children going to the same school, and so you know we're invested in that.
And then I can't do that. But one of my kids is going through puberty, and it's a whole situation.
All right, let's save that for another show.
Okay.
All right, so last week, Isabel, or the last time you were on, you recommended Jig, documentary about Irish step dancing. Competitions. Now, Myla takes Irish step dancing. She has graduated to hard shoe as of yesterday.
Whoa. Whoa.
And thank you. There was a question as to whether or not we would put her in competitions.
No.
And the answer was no.
Did you watch the movie?
Well, I did not watch the movie. However, Myla watched it with her aunt and only made it 15 minutes through, and then she was like, I want to see something else.
Oh.
She really liked Epic. Which you did not recommend.
Oh, Epic. My kids, I think, watched Epic the other day.
Yeah, it was good. So that didn't happen, but I'm going to push Myla to watch Irish step dancing movie Jig in the future. But
it
I want to hear
yeah.
what you have
okay,
for
what
us
I have today.
Today.
Okay. All right. I have to be truthful in that I am ambiguous about how I feel about this movie. But I liked the concept around it.
Mm.
And...
This doesn't sound like
this
a good
is the producer is ready, Zach Galifianakis.
Okay. All right, so Zach.
Na, na, na.
I know.
Na, na, na. on the rock now.
Do you know Zach?
No, but I know that song.
Okay.
Gak Zach Fagovanakis.
I don't know that song, but I know Zach from back in the day.
Oh, you
do? Comedy World. Sure.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know him personally, but there's a song that has his name in it, and then I saw that he was a producer, and I
What is it?
It's called Craigslist Joe. And it's a documentary about a guy who happens to be named Joe, but he also is sort of an average Joe.
Oh, I heard about this.
Right.
I heard about this, and it sounded very interesting.
It is. That's why I watched it.
Well, tell everybody
so
what it's about.
So here's what it's about. He says, as an experiment, he's feeling because of the internet and people on their phones and iPads and I this and that and tablets that there's a lack of community in the United States. The community is going down the toilet.
I'm not sure if I buy that, but go ahead.
Okay. So this is what there were people that said, I'm not sure that I buy that. So he says, all right, I'm going to get rid of all, I'm not getting rid of, but I'm not going to have any money, just the clothes on my back and a toothbrush. And I'm going to see if I can survive for a month only using Craigslist.
The internet.
Craigslist. Not right. Just the internet.
Right.
Craigslist. Hmm. Yeah, right. The internet.
See, sort of undercuts his...
His argument. This is why the whole movie, I felt, was a little bit like...
No, but Craigslist is sort of like local, community-based, online. Like it's,
and certainly, yeah. And certainly it's Craig Newmark, right? He has held off on any opportunity to sort of cash in on that thing in the way that was traditional, where you would sell it out and... really maximize the profits. He actually has a very grounded notion of community.
The only place they make their money from is in the major cities. It costs money to put a post up if you're looking to hire.
To hire. $25.
But no matter where you are, even in the major cities, everything else, whether you're posting looking for a bandmate, you're posting to sell something, you're posting to meet right. some friends,
well,
it's all free.
Yeah. Fair enough. And guess what? Here's the thing. People post everything. Yes. I'm looking for someone to drive to Portland with. I'm looking for someone to, like, I'm starting to teach cooking. Will you take a free class? You know, so I can practice. So he just went on, and people are obsessed with Craigslist and go and check every day and check all over the place. And there's a million places you can check, and there's all these different connections that are being made. And so he would just, you know, I need someone to wash my cat. I mean, that didn't happen, but, and so he'd be like, I'll wash your cat for a sandwich or something like that. So he finds himself on this journey, and it does go from state to state, existing on the postings.
So how could that not be good?
It is good. It is good. I just,
it's not
I
great.
Have, no, it is. It is. And it's good to watch with someone. I would imagine I watched it by myself, but it's good to because it is a good conversation. Because then,
but so it sounds like the movie's not great, but the idea is better.
I think the movie is kind of great, but and you'll see how it
Did
ends.
Zach Galifianakis ruin it by showing up and like, hey, look at me,
Zach Galifianakis,
playing a piano.
Even the white girl, da-na-na. Come on, you do know that song.
I don't know what that is.
You don't?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So
is this a movie recommendation
yes!
or is this a movie disappointment?
I would watch it with Nikki. I would watch it. You know, it's a conversation piece. It's like people doing. I like the kind of.
I can't have conversations with Nikki about any movie because she falls asleep halfway through all of them.
God, I wish. You know, Peter falls asleep through almost everything. We're watching Game Change.
Game Change.
Not
Why
Game
did you
Change.
Say that?
I, you know what's it called?
House of Cards.
House of Cards. Yep. House of Cards. We're watching that.
Yeah, it's a little late. I'm not going to tell you how it ends.
Well, okay, but that's what we're watching. Peter
I'm
falls
famous
asleep.
Famous for my spoilers.
Did you like it?
Well, I can't really answer that
okay,
question without
right.
spoiling it.
Well, and
yes
we're going to watch
no?
Breaking Bad. But so this is a good. This is it's not that long. It's a good Friday night. Like you know what? Because here's the thing: I get lots of babysitters off Craigslist. And they're all awesome. No. They're all awesome. They're all kids that are like coming out of Princeton and are about to go to the Peace Corps and they've got
yeah.
6 months.
Yeah. Do they post their transcript? I mean, how do you know?
Because then I meet them.
And they go, I'm from Princeton. And you say, okay.
Well, no, man. It's true. It's true. My best babysitters come from Craigslist because all the kids are on. That's how they roll.
All right.
And so this is why it's interesting to me and the movie's interesting and it's well done.
All right. Well, it is. What is it again?
September 28th.
What?
or seven. No.
What is the name of the...
It's called Craigslist Joe.
Isabel, did you just do that? Did that just happen and you're just sort of playing it off? Did you just know?
Like, here's why I did that. Because in the morning, I say, hey, good morning, everyone. It's September 27th all day long.
That's what you do that in your house?
Yes, because I feel like it's important for kids to know what day it is right from the first minute.
So you wake up and act as if you're right away opening up.
Do you do this over a PA system in your house or what?
I walk into their bedroom and I say, good morning, good morning. And then I say, kids, it's September 27th, Friday, all day long.
All right, fair enough. What is the movie that you recommend?
It's called Craigslist Joe. And it's not directed by Zach Galifianakis, okay, but it is produced by Zach Galifianakis. What's and it's streaming. You can stream it right down.
The Gillies household, strange.
What scenario is there where you have to say that it's all day long? Like, where's the scenario where September 28th would not be all day long?
Well, because I think my dad said it to me.
Ah, okay.
Okay.
I think he said it to me, and it somehow...
That's very sweet.
Well, you know, it starts off the day, you know where you are. I even might
say... The first thing Mila does is she runs and gets the temperature, and she tells us what the weather report's going to be for the day.
I think I might fold in a temperature.
And she does it, though. She at the beginning of the first thing she does, she goes to one of our devices. We let her use it to do the weather report for the day. And so she'll come in and she'll say... It's going to be in the 50s, and then the 60s, and then the low 70s. So we all know what to wear.
30% chance of rain. Okay, I might take that, but also, wouldn't it be nice that, you know, like in the 70s, there was a thermometer on your window, and you'd go and see what temperature it was.
Yeah.
And now we're all on our cell but you know
what? But I got news for you. It is really handy to know what the weather is going to be. And the weather, I have to say, is one of the best
conversations ever.
No,
one of my most interesting. There's actually nothing more interesting than talking about the weather.
All right, folks. Isabel Gillies. The movie is Craigslist Joe. Isabel, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Always
I love being
a
in
pleasure.
The studio.
All right, folks. It's going to be a freebie Friday. Let's go right into some of the IMs. You can hang out, Isabel.
I'll hang out for an IM or two.
Oh, please. Please do.
I love the all day long thing. Like, one day you're going to have to, like, walk in and be like, kids, the Earth has turned on its axis and we'll have 12 hours of September 27th.
And then it will change to September 28th. Midday.
Isn't there, like, a leap year thing?
I made, by the way, before I came here, I made Pepitas toffee.
I don't even know how to respond to that. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Candy maker.
Wow.
Candy maker.
Isabel Gillies, folks. I mean, how many times? Does anybody know anybody out there who is a New York Times bestseller, was on SVU for 12 years, makes her own...
Pepitas candy.
Pepitas candy and curtains, apparently.
Curtains.
And a lot of also, at the drop of a hat, tell you what day it is.
Well, guess what? Yeah, a lot of people are busy.
I mean, unless Mariska from SVU does all those things.
Oh, she does so much more than me. Oh, my Lord.
Do you ever run into her?
Yeah.
Did you ever tell
her?
She
can come for Friday one day.
Did you ever tell her that
really?
I did a show?
Yes, she'll come down.
Wait,
if
did
she's
you
not...
tell her? Because I did a show with her.
You did?
You did?
Yes.
I'm a big fan.
Mariska Hargitay and I had...
She's awesome.
We were on All American Girl together 18 years ago.
Dude, I will get her to come down for Fun Time Friday.
She played, and I've ran into her maybe it was 10 years ago in New York when the show must have started. I think she'll vaguely remember me, I think. She played my, like, I was pining after her in the show.
She is a babe and the nicest woman and a great mother and works like a Trojan.
She was... Trojans work hard? I've never heard that expression at all.
How have you not heard of works like a Trojan?
I don't know.
She works hard. She works like 15 hours a day, so I don't know if she'd be able to come down, but we could call her.
All right.
You want to call her right now?
No.
I will.
But she played a bartender, and I hung out like it was like a Friends ripoff, I think.
And it was called All-American Girl?
Yeah, with Margaret Cho.
She's hugely popular. That
heads up, by the way, on the season premiere, she was talking about
Save Benson.
Yeah, and she was talking about her old partner a lot. Oh. So if he's coming back,
come on,
you could be back.
Bring Kathy Stabler back.
Yes,
I don't want to make any more freaking curtains. Come on. Some
of
that sweet.
Okay, let's go through some of these IMs. Political me on the app, loving the app on the Samsung Galaxy S4, letting us, thanks to Noah about letting us know about the tablet issue. Matt Marr, Sam, should I move my retirement monies into a government fund instead of the stock market with this pending debt ceiling fight coming? I'm a 52-year-old postal worker and respect your opinion. I would never give such advice, frankly. I mean, one way or another. I mean, I don't know. I imagine, look, if this debt ceiling thing does, they blew through it, and the you're 52 years old, presuming you're not going to retire and take that money out for another 13 years, I would leave it in myself, but please don't take my advice on this. I am not, and I don't know if there's anybody less qualified to talk about the stock market. But you know, the one thing that I've seen,
I might be a little
we're creating the Sam Cedar Insider Edge newsletter for stock tips and gold as well, which you can pay a subscription
your husband
base for.
Maybe. Peter might. Yeah.
P. Diddy Lats may be able to be.
Yeah, we should have maybe Peter in to give financial advice.
He would come on.
He writes for the New York Times, for gosh sakes.
I know, and he worked at Goldman Sachs.
He did?
Yeah, for 6 years.
Oh, my God, we're not letting him in this office. We'll wash him down first. Yeah, I mean, you know, somebody put out a thing about just like, I think it was Harold Pollack, put out everything you need to know about your financial stuff on one index card. And I think he basically said, just index funds. That's the safest bet, but I don't know. I'm just telling you what I heard. The same manner the Nazi war machine was supported by the industrialists in the West to thwart European communism and became uncontrolled Frankenstein monster, same right-wingers today have created the Tea Party crazies, creating havoc domestically. Indeed. M.M. Chari, didn't Michelle Obama go to Princeton? I don't know. Look at this, Bush and Chains, 10 IMs.
She did.
I love Michelle Obama.
Let's see. Looks like the rich in London are taking their financial stress on the peons. Teabagger support near record low. Panama announces 5-bank holiday. Glad to hear Credo sponsoring the majority report. However, I am having a hard time finding iPhones on their site because I so want one. What gives? Just downloaded the Majority Report app. Works great on my Nexus 7 as I can walk around and listen to the show with my Bluetooth headphones. Also, for added benefit, allows me to multitask and surf as I listen. Great job. Oh, it's very kind of you, Bush and Chains. D. Williams, the Android app isn't giving me the opportunity to listen to your wonderful show live. I don't know why that should be the case. Send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com and let us know what the phone is. Gillipo just made an extra contribution for the app. Thank you. Kevin 11721. Will you be able to provide special coverage on Tuesday the 1st? Reporters calling in from the smoking ruins of Washington. Prayer vigils. Maybe a rabbi and a priest offering us support. This is because of the impending Obamacare exchange is coming online. Read the conservative con business. We're all crazy to be sitting here complaining. We have to get on our game face and grab our share of the loony pie money. I will say this. I had contemplated a while back putting out a documentary called The Real Obama and criticizing him for like, he is supporting the private industry providing health care. We need health care coverage now. Just sort of to compete with the other, you know, because you could sell so many of those and then they'd bring it home and they'd be like, wait a second, Medicare for all? What? It would have been fun. Maybe I should still do it.
You still got time.
Biminerally, can Obama abolish the debt ceiling or at least challenge it? Yes, we could talk about. We'll talk about this in the coming days. There is constitutional authority, as far as I'm concerned. Jesus was a lefty. Right now, my wife or I are on our parents' AT&T plan, but a year we plan to switch to our own plan, to switch to Credo. Great choice for a sponsor. You're on your AT&T plan. Okay. Because they will, I don't know if they're going to do a buyout. I don't know what the deal is going to be, but great day for Random Rush. He's back on the attack on the climate cult and Al Gore in the aftermath of the frantic IPCC report. He's flat out responding, there has been no warming since 1980. No massive floods, no major heat, no major earthquakes. To which we all respond, Colorado, Australia, and Turkey. In condescending Hillary Clinton fashion, still wondering if they throw earthquakes in there because they're truly ignorant of climate scientists. Defeat a crack. I was not sure where Cliff was going with that computerized hand in Boner's future office. Glad to find out it was just giving him a cigarette. Gary, I'm a federal worker, IRS agent. Thank you for articulating the anxiety we've been facing regarding our employment security. No raises for 4 years. Yes, remember that. President Obama froze federal pay. Furlough days, repeated threats of government shutdowns. When will the bankers get furloughed? And Buenera, love seeing you on TV, like All In last night, and when they cut to you after you've had to listen to some right-wing bullshit. Yeah, I was laughing through that congresswoman's entire, it was a joke. I am Jimmy Sullivan. Don't you think the 1% have told the T-Billies, posture all you want, but default is going to adversely affect me, so that ain't going to happen? That is the hope, but the question is to what extent, you know, there's a lot of money on that Tea Party side. You know, the Koch brothers and whatnot, they own commodities that probably, in their mind, may not suffer in the way they are. I mean, people are going to need oil, regardless of what happens to the financial markets. And they're still getting theirs. Now, you may see Keystone XL pipeline in some type of deal. Who knows? That's the hope, Jimmy Sullivan. That is the hope. Susan, love you guys. Donated the first day of the app. I can't seem to watch unless until you post the link. Help. I'm Luke's grandma. I hope Luke is doing well. Susan, you'll find that the live video streaming on the app will be fine by Monday. It's a little bit confusing now. Lawyer Matthew, not this weekend, but still need to have dinner with the Golds and Peter and Isabel. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. They're not going up.
Not going up.
Not this year. iPhone Folk Rock, option 5 on the debt ceiling for Obama. Call meeting with Boehner. Ask when he walks in. Obama and Biden slide their resignation letters across the table and say, congratulations, Mr. President. Good luck handling the default. Isabel doesn't hire babysitters from the lesser Ivies.
That's right.
Bam. Dr. Radmanthes. Enjoyed your chat with Cliff. I disagree about Cruz and Dr. Seuss, though. As I said yesterday, I really think Cruz just has a different interpretation of Cat in the Hat. Cruz is indeed an arrogant a-hole, as Cliff said, but I don't think he's stupid. I really think Green Eggs and Hams is a tragedy. He identifies, like many conservatives, with a person who's resisting something weird or other that hippie liberals are trying to force down their throats. Dr. Seuss himself clearly flavors a liberal point of view, but conservatives naturally identify with a whiny child who doesn't want to eat anything green and therefore either ignores the ending or sees it as corruption of conservative values. You know, you may be right, but he said at the end, Americans don't like green eggs and ham, and nor do they like, well, you know, you may be right.
Like real Americans.
Real Americans. Not the hippie green eggs and ham eaters.
Or black people.
Jay Tingle, LaGuardia was born off Sullivan Street, off of Houston.
Hey, village.
You know, I caught this too, and I wasn't going to say anything because Michael is so sensitive. Michael used the word misnomer improperly. He probably intended to say misconception or misapprehension. Indeed.
I apologize.
Misnomer is when you use the wrong word.
Misnomer is when you use the wrong name.
When you call something the wrong name. Yeah, that's right.
Nomer.
Like climate Scientologist, as an example.
Would Isabel accept the babysitter from RISD?
Dude, of course.
Umar, how come not a beep about the $1 trillion coin in the media this time around? I say we just deposit a Googleplex dollar coin and be done with it. Debt limit nonsense forever. We will talk about it again coming up, but I think it's, I think the case has been made, frankly. And there isn't the same sort of like, there doesn't seem to be the same inclination by the media to not blame the Republicans this time around. Regarding Credo, a previous guest mentioned working with them to get petition signatures. I humbly suggest your listeners resist for their progressive alerts, even if they don't use their register for their progressive alerts. Makes it very easy to register your opinion. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, part of what now we've had Credo on before during the promotion. I've had, people like Becky Bond, Credo's head of their political action wing on the program at Netroots, and I think once or twice sort of unrelated. What we would do, I mean, what I would like to do during the promotion, and we're still working this out, but I would like to have the Credo people on some type of regular basis. I mean, over the course of the promotion, but obviously, you know, in the same way that we also during the promotion, but during the promotion in particular, because in my mind, we're not just promoting their mobile service. We're promoting their actions, and they both go after media and politicians, and really, honestly, more than any other group, they have no problem scorching a relationship. They don't even seem to worry about relationships in terms of these politicians. They go for direct action on the politicians to get them to move in a certain way. Born Blue. Something's up with the app. Won't run in the background. It's been running perfectly with my iOS 7 update until now. Don't know why that would be. Rusticus, one distinction between... You want to leave?
I got to go.
She's got to go, ladies and gentlemen.
I did.
Isabel Gillies. There's the fanfare.
Goodbye.
Leaving the building. Isabel, thank
Adios.
You so much. Bye.
See you later, guys. See Bye, you. America. Okay,
it was a pleasure.
Oh, it's for me.
That was great, ladies and gentlemen.
Bye, Isabel.
Bye.
That was great.
Bye, guys.
See you again soon.
Yeah, hopefully next time.
All right. One distinction between the Tea Party and past iterations like the Minutemen is the electoral gains we've seen by candidates directly under the Tea Party banner. I mean, basically what's happening, but not just under the Tea Party banner. Look, this is a rebranding of the conservative base. And it is the same moral majority. It's just that now they have taken over the party. And in fact, grab me FUBAR. Is FUBAR over there?
It's always.
Give me a copy of this. I want to read something to you guys.
There's always a copy of
FUBAR. I mean
FUBAR
to tout my own horn here. But this is 2006.
Oh, do you mean toot?
What did I say?
Yeah, pardon.
What did I say?
You said tout.
I didn't say toot my own horn?
Nope.
All right.
You can talk about your horn if you'd like to tout it.
Page 2 of the introduction. Where is this? Okay, page 2 of the introduction. It's not even numbered. It's X. That's why, as you'll notice, we use the terms Bush, Republicans, and Rapture Right interchangeably. What was once the fringe, the embarrassing cousin they saw only when they had to, special occasions, especially the ones held every 4 years in November, has now become the heart of the Republican Party. They finally got the real power, and like Bush with the phantom political capital he claimed to have earned after the 2004 election, they intend to use it. So there it is. Back in 06, it was quite clear what was happening. Before there was any Tea Party. And they laughed at us. Who's crazy now? Who's crazy now? So somebody, this conservative Jen Nerd. So I'm tuning into Majority FM today in anticipation of Cedar's explanation of Obama delaying Obamacare provisions. This is another right winger who spews on Twitter. I invite to call in and have a conversation about it. Refuse to do it. The most cowardly bunch that has ever lived. At least, and I've said this before, at least libertarians, they may not know what they're talking about half the time, but at least they have, it's not even balls. It's just some measure of confidence in that they know what they're talking about. Some measure of confidence that they know what they're talking about so that they can at least maintain one half of a conversation about it. But they cannot.
The people who don't want to call in, I legitimately think they just aren't, they're not confident enough of what they think.
This guy doesn't
and they feel
understand
like they'll look like a fool.
Anything. Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want to be a fool. I mean, the idea that the Republicans have not done everything in their power to gum up the works of this is, you have to be either lying to yourself or simply totally ignorant. Which I would say is not a mutually exclusive proposition. There's no doubt in my mind that this moron, And you are a moron, sir. You are a moron. You're a moron. I'm going to say it one more time. You're a moron. Forget the cowardly part. You're obviously cowardly. Maybe you have enough self-awareness to realize I'm a moron. And so if I go and I make this declaration that in some fashion, the Republicans, it's the White House, only the White House are responsible. How could the Republicans possibly in any way impede the execution of the Affordable Care Act if they're not in the White House? You are a moron. And the best thing I can say about you is you do not have the courage of your convictions, so you're saving yourself from embarrassment. There are 27 states who have decided that they will not administer their own state exchange and have thrown it to the federal government. Far more than anyone predicted. They have done so for political reasons. 25 of those are Republican governors. 25. It's completely understandable if a couple of smaller states don't have the apparatus to do this. But the idea that 25 Republicans and only two Democrats, the idea that that's a coincidence is absurd. Is absurd. We have seen time and time again during the debt ceiling fight, Republicans forced the first one in 2011. One of the underreported things was that it prevented it cut the funding to provide for nonprofit co-op insurance companies, organizations to compete in the exchanges, also hampering the exchanges. The Republicans are funding, along with the insurance industry, and are passing laws in states to defund the navigators, those people who are to help people into the exchanges. Organizations that were set up to help people navigate the exchanges. Also being defunded by the Republicans. You are seeing Republicans finance and go on to the television say, if you go into these exchanges, you're going to die. You have to be a moron or a liar to claim that Republicans have not obstructed the implementation of this. Even they don't deny that, you moron. They brag about it, you moron, who is so cowardly that you refuse a direct invitation to call into the program. You're a moron. Every conservative who's ever tweeted me on Twitter with one of the things, same, also not a coincidence. So cowardly, refuse to actually put a voice, to actually feel the incredible tinge of embarrassment when they realize that everything they believe is just from right-wing talking points and they know nothing of what they're talking about. At least the libertarians who call in have the courage to engage in a debate. Pathetic little imp. Okay, let's go back to the IMs. What I meant yesterday by a close button on the app is some way to close down the app after the show. Mine stays open in Android until I force close it. Not a big deal, just a suggestion. Send it, an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com with that because I'm not sure I fully understand it. You guys should pitch an L&O plot line featuring a de Blasio cameo and Sam maybe as his press guy or host a radical underground podcast called The Majority Report. Also, how are Cedar v. Gilly podcast plans coming? Yeah, we got to work on that too. Lib Dem, I got a 6.6. It got a 6.6 rating on IMDb. Isabel's voice and mannerisms remind me so much of Annie Hall. She sounds just like her. A Square, Sam was really looking forward to hearing you and Cliff recap this crazy weekend Republican and point analysis. Add that to your last two Fridays with Cliff. Agree, not much discussion on mainstream media about the right-wing media complex cottage industry and how much money is involved, but that's because of complicity. Your segment with Chris was in your wheelhouse. That sets you up, too, as a more astute analysis of the real politic involved. Bravo. Thank you. Kadam. Sorry, not getting a sitter off of Craigslist. WTH. It's Friday all day unless it rains. Then it's rainy day. That's what my dad told me. Isabel is so charming with her slight kookiness. I love this app. You couldn't make it easier. On my iDevice, I can even tap the mic and speak my IMs. Caveat, using a little mic for IM during the show pauses the show. This is normal iOS behavior. Is that guy a moron? Dolink. Craigslist Joe was a wonderful, inspiring, nice guy, and people he met when he depressed about issues of the day made me feel hopeful again, kind of like listening to the Majority Report. Atom Bomb. Gotten any answer on insurance rescission yet? No, about that. I have not figured that out with the tobacco yet. Ronald Reagan. Sam, please talk about how awful Ted Cruz's face is. Discuss. Mr. Schechter does not approve of Princeton babysitters. Goddess Olivia, thanks for fixing the tablet issue. Now I can listen on my Nook. Oh, good. Was unable to get the audio feed to load on my phone today. It's a Droid Razor. Millington, FYI, Sams, you always mispronounce modernity. Modernity. Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
How often does Sam even use that word to even...
Is that what you're trying to say when you say that?
Modernity?
Yes.
And I say modernity, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's what it is.
Modernity.
Okay.
I think Michael's screwing with you.
I'm just messing with you.
Well,
I mean, I get it.
A mispronunciation in the pecking order, the hierarchy of faux pas is much better than a malapropism.
Not if it's such
tremendously butchered.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
All right. So you're just going
right.
to bludgeon it.
Just, okay. I'm going to what it?
You're going to just.
I'm going to what did he say?
You're just going to bludgeon the point.
Bludgeon the point.
All right,
Norm Crosby. You don't know who Norm Crosby is, so don't worry about it. I thought Cliff Schechter said he didn't like Princeton graduates. Anyway, Sam, since you're running a business, how is it knowing that you may have to pay a penalty if you are, as a business owner, don't offer health insurance? I got less than 50 people in my office. So
surprisingly.
Yeah. Now, if I had more than 50 people in my office...
We would most definitely need a bigger office.
We would definitely need a bigger office. The idea that $40,000 of an operation would be somewhat problematic, but I don't think it would be that much, to be honest with you. I mean, I contemplate, you know, what I just spent on the app, and not $40,000, but a sizable percentage of $40,000. And particularly relative to the revenue of this program. I think long-term that's going to help me. I also think if I had healthy workers, it would help me. I also think that if I offered that benefit, it would also help me. And so $40,000 annually, it may be a problem for a small percentage of small businesses. We know that only 1% of the 6.5 billion workplaces in this country, around 70,000, will be subjected to this. I don't even know if all those 70,000 don't already offer health insurance in some form or another. So the numbers we're talking about are rather small. You will hear the anecdotes because they make great anecdotes, but the reality is something very different. Most big employers are getting around that in some way or another. See, B-Scene, you don't know what you're talking about. Most big employers already provide health insurance. They already provide health insurance. What is Obama going to do about that? This is not the president I vote for. Look, there is a perfectly good and very important critique about keeping the private insurance industry alive, about subsidizing it in this way. Medicare for all, or even a Medicare buy-in situation, would have been far, far better. And there are certainly critiques to be made in a narrow policy sense. About this, there are some very good critiques out there of the employer mandate. I don't think that we should even have, you know, our insurance tied to employers, but that's an entirely different. But know the facts here. Know the facts. You know, the reality is that premiums are going to go up for people who are you guys' age, Matt and Mike's age, 27 to 30, let's say, maybe 35. If you were living in a state that didn't require guaranteed issue. In other words, you live in New York State. New York State has always required guaranteed issue, no pre-existing conditions, whatnot. That was already priced in, and it caused individual insurance rates to be very expensive in New York State. Now they're going to be about half what they were yesterday. And it's because they already had some of these requirements that brought everybody into the system. For that one cohort, insurance is going to be more expensive. But here's the thing. That one cohort, they're not going to be 27 to 35 for the rest of their lives. That may seem like a fairly obvious thing to state, but that is the case.
But I've been without insurance for a bit over a year now, because when I turned 26, I was no longer under my mom's plan. But I remember I was looking for insurance plans, and I could not afford to do it with the prices I was getting for the past year. But then I'm looking at under the Obamacare premiums that came out, and I'm definitely gonna be able to do it.
Yeah,
even if
we gotta have a whole segment on that. We got to have you guys both bring in the numbers and do that. And I really think you guys should write something about it. But all right, let me keep going here. Millington. I think Michael would like to hear you say modernity if he took the occasional break from vacation. Vacation burn. Gassy I am. I don't know what that means. Sam, you should have someone to talk about what's going on in Venezuela right now. Food shortages, price controls, etc. We write that down.
Koslov, maybe.
Isabel, does Sam validate parking? Fresh fruit in the green room? Green room. Cyberstrike. We call that the elevator. Isabel Gillies is hilarious and awesome. Like the morning greeting deal. My mom would just hand me a cup of Joe and tell me not to miss my school bus back in the day. Triangle Bill. Sam and Isabel. Missed the whole show, sadly. Just tuned in. Mariska in studio for the 3-year anniversary extravaganza show. Great job on Chris Hayes last night. That dingbat congresswoman on there about Obamacare really embarrassed herself. She's from a district close by where she lives. She was installed by AFP money in 2010. That dude doesn't know what he's talking about. All really big employers, large transnational corporations, do operations in the U.S. are what's called self-insured, meaning they're already insuring their employers. They use insurance companies like United Healthcare or Aetna to essentially just administer the program. These companies make money on their employees. So stupid. Kay Bakes, I love Isabel. R. Fain, those people who can't see how to listen live might not have noticed this tiny little play button at the bottom of the page. Jeremo, Sammy, app is great. President Obama needs to find his mojo. Bingo Mosquito. Politics, business, investment advice, movie reviews, parenting guidance for teaching your children sex education, and we take your calls. Today is Friday, September 27th, 2013. I'm Sam C. This is Majority Report. Indeed, right? God, we give so much. Sam, this is Don from Atlanta. Download the app, having some issues, but overall pretty awesome. Send us a Gmail, Don, and we'll figure it out. Ashwife, do the far right corporate interests who initially funded the initial Tea Party AstroTurf movement still really have control over it? Have they created a serious sustaining monster that will turn on them? Yes, they still have control over it. Thank you for calling out knuckle dragger right wingers as morons. There's nothing else to say to them. Eatinitude, please have on a guest to talk about the influence New York City mayor has with the police, both legally and politically. Curious how de Blasio will handle Occupy. L.R. Porter, PP's newest poll, says now finds Ted Cruz is the top choice of Republican primary voters for their candidate. I love it. I love it. Jimmy Reefer Cake and the mic and sending I Am Love through the app. Peace. CXB45. Cruz has a face that just invites you to want to punch him. Moniker, love the app. Happy I did not miss Sam's rants live today with the imp. C. McDonald, Sam, glad you and Cliff talked about the upcoming imaginary 9/11 Pearl Harbor and didn't have to discuss another gun slaughter. Nice job last night. Thank you. Brett, hey, Sam, love the show and the app. Lets me easily listen as I go to my lunch break. Way to go slamming the moron. T-Billies are the most gutless bunch in the history of American politics. Sagita, Mariana Rivera, said goodbye. Bob Duncan, did you see the pathetic attempt by Kentucky College Republicans to paint Alice Lundgren Grimes as an elitist? I didn't. The Jones. Hi, Sam. Employer mandate is more complex than the anecdote suggests. Simply cutting employee hours doesn't avoid the obligation. You sum up all the employees' hours and divide by full time. See if a business is over 50 employees. And there's no data to support this. There's actually less part-time employees now than there were in 2011. Kyle, another vote for the 12-hour marathon show, return of Chris Rosen, and the final I Am of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Hal Rager, great job on Chris Hayes last night. Tune in Monday, Matt Taibbi live in studio.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie bar. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow I lost my drive,